Hola, hola y bienvenidos a Tu Salud, the definitive podcast for Latine and Indigenous health policy, where we talk about all things Latine, policy, and our health. I am Dr. Ceci Aquino, Executive Director at the Latino Coalition for a Healthy California. And today, I am joined by the amazing and poderosa Bambi Salcedo, CEO and President at Trans Latina Coalition. Today, we'll be talking about the power of our stories in centering our fight for justice, the structural changes needed for health reform, and the organizational policies we can implement to advance health equity within our teams. Y con eso, let's get started. Hola, muy buenos días y bienvenida a Tu Salud, Bambi. We're so excited to have you today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here, Cecia, and thank you so much to all the beautiful people who are watching today. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, to get us started today, let's talk about the personal. Tell us a little bit more about you, who you are.
Well, my name is Bambi Salcedo, and I am a very privileged trans, Latina, mujer, emigrante, indocumentada, who has the privilege to lead now the biggest trans-led organization in the United States. And obviously, it has not been easy to come to be the person that I am today. I come from humble beginnings. I was born and raised in Guadalajara, Mexico, by two young people who came from the outskirts of the city, who met at the city at a very young age. And my mother and my father, gave born to three beautiful, amazing children. But my father left my mother before I was born. And so my mother was left to raise us with with however she was able to, and because she needed to work and do all of that, I didn't have the support and the love and everything that I needed at the time. My mother soon after got together with a very abusive person, my outlet was to start using drugs at a very early age. So I started sniffing glue about 8 years old. Mm-hmm. I started being institutionalized at age 12 and youth facilities in Mexico until I had the opportunity to meet my father, who was living in the United States at that time, and went to Mexico, to Guadalajara. And when I was 15, I was incarcerated at the youth facility. And I was able to meet him, and he offered for me to come when I get out. And I did that. At 16, I came to the United States, and started using heavier drugs here, until I finally came to LA at 18, and that's when I started my transition and started, being involved in the street economy, because that's what I knew. And that took me to go to prison four different times, being deported four different times, until I finally reformed my life and started working in social justice. And so here I am now, after many trials and tribulations, I got to, become the person that I am today because of the support of many people like you and others, many members of our community.
Thank you so much for sharing. I feel so privileged to be not just in the work with you, but to know you. And I think everyone knows this, but any room that you walk into, you bring that light, you bring the joy, and you just make all of us smile with just your shine and your brightness. So I just want to say thank you for that as well.
Oh, thank you, hermosa. It really means a lot. I'm just grateful that I get to live today, and then I get to live every day, and I try to live the best possible way that I can, and obviously share that with everyone who I come across with.
I love that. So going into your experience getting into the social justice space and the nonprofit space, tell us a little bit about that journey. How did that take you into your role today?
I started being involved in community around 1997, 1998. Mm-hmm. Back then there was an organization that is called Bienestar, some people may be familiar with. They started a support group for trans Latinas. And at that time I was still, you know, using drugs, and I was involved in whatever I was doing at that time. But I started organizing my friends, right? Mm-hmm. Like, let's go to this group and let's go, you know, let's bring our voices and let's talk about our needs and issues, right? And so I started then, and also, you know, the police was very harsh towards us, right? Because, you know, they obviously, we have always been criminalized because of who we are, but they were using entrapments to put us in jail, and, you know, vice operations and all of those things, right? And so we protested LAPD and the Hollywood station. So then it took me another prison term. And then when I got out in 2000, I was deported and then came back. That's when I, you know, I guess my life circumstances sort of like pushed me to ask my higher power, you know, God, to help me. And I somehow ended up in a rehab. And that's how sort of like my journey started. And then when I was in rehab, I think, you know, there were a couple of things that happened. One, they didn't have any services support for people who were monolingual Spanish speakers, right? And so there were a couple of people who didn't speak any English. And so they were there, but they were there, you know, because they were taking their money, their insurance, or whatever it was, right? But they were not getting anything, any type of support. And so I started advocating, you know, about that. And then as I was going in the progression of my treatment there, there were different things that you needed to do in order to, like, go to the different phases. I asked my counselor to, you know, to help me find a way for me to learn how to facilitate groups. So I was trained to facilitate, and so I started a Spanish speaking group there. And also I was the only trans person there, and so there was really nothing specifically for LGBTQ people. So I was doing that too. So I had two groups that I was facilitating, one for Spanish speakers, and the other one for LGBTQ people.
Amazing.
And then when I was in this treatment facility, as you're getting ready to graduate, you're supposed to, you know, either get a job or do something, right, with your life. But because I was undocumented, I couldn't get a job. And also because I'm trans, right, it was harder. And the expectations, you know, are for everybody the same, right? And so my experience was different then in that regard. And so what I did was that I enrolled myself in an adult school to learn computers, or to learn how to type, because then It was in 2000, and I couldn't even, I didn't even know how to turn on a computer, you know? And so that was, you know, what I needed to do in order for me to get out of this treatment facility. And I went to a transitional housing program. And when I was in this transitional housing program, there was a position open at BNSTAR to do outreach. You know, it was an HIV prevention position, and also to facilitate groups for other trans, you know, Latinas. And so I applied and I got the job, and that was sort of like my introduction to all of this. But I do have to say that in 2002, Gwen Araujo was murdered. Gwen Araujo was a young trans girl who was barely beaten and buried alive. And that personally touched me and really enraged me. And, you know, I got to the point to say, like, oh, hell no, right? Mm-hmm. And because I was able to see things differently, right? Mm-hmm. I wasn't under the influence of any substances, and I was seeing that my experiences, my friends were still experiencing them, and that, you know, and so because I had this privilege of having a job and all of this, I also felt that I had a responsibility, right? And so that's how I, you know, I started sort of like organizing more radically, I guess, because again, the murder of Gwen Araujo really touched me, but also I think change the broader trans movement as well.
Yeah, oh, that's beautiful.
So that was a pivotal moment for me.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing it. And this movement into representing the community, right, with your story, with your voice, bringing and centering the trans community, trans Latina community in this work. Can you share a little bit more about, you know, what that looks like in the work and in your personal life?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, since I started working, you know, I started back then, you know, it's like I've been working on nonprofit work or nonprofit organizations, right, for a while. And so I started like, you know, as like as an entry-level position. And then from there, I became a manager. I became, you know, different programs. Then I went to work for Children's Hospital Los Angeles, and so I've learned, you know, program design, I learned evaluation, right? Like I learned different things. Not only that, but I also started going to school. So I went to, the only education that I had at the time was sixth grade. I went to school in Mexico. So I only finished primary school, right, or la primaria, and that was it, right? And then when I was here and I was like learning all of these things, and specifically when I was at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, I remember that I was a project coordinator, but I didn't have you know, these letters after my name, right? And so I couldn't get promotions, right? I saw that there was other people who were like program managers who had like master degree level education, and only had like two people that they were managing, and they were making more money. And I was a project coordinator, and I had like 10 people that I was managing, and I was making less money than they were. And that's how that system worked, right? And so I was like, oh, you know, I need to get in school. And so I went and enrolled in the community college. I did an assessment test, and I started, you know, my educational journey. And I, you know, I was stuck in community college for about 10 years because my math level was very low. And so in order for me to transfer, I needed to know statistics. Nonetheless, I took statistics 3 times and I passed.
Love it.
Finally, I transfer and then, you know, was able to get a master's degree after all. But all of that to say is that, you know, my personal experience, my work experience, but also, you know, through that process, my academic experience as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
In 2009, I was, you know, I am a survivor also of the immigration detention. I was beaten when I was in immigration detention, and I was transported out of the immigration detention to a hospital to be cared for. And so back then, the conditions of trans women in immigration detention were horrible, right? Like there were cases of people who, you know, were sexually abused and beaten and all of that. And nobody would do anything. And so, you know, I lived that. I felt, you know, I seen that. And so I got some of my friends together and, you know, say like, what are we going to do? Right. We need to have a voice. We need to have, you know, we need to uplift our needs and issues. And, and at that time, there were 2 translator organizations that were doing obviously amazing work, but, you know, we're not thinking of the needs of trans Latino people. And so we started, you know, going to visit our friends at the detention centers, get them connected to lawyers, fundraise to put money in their books, and picking them up when they would get out and, you know, give them social or connect them to social service organizations. And you know, and we did all of this on a volunteer basis for 6 years.
Wow.
Until we finally got our first grant in January 2016. And then we built our organization. I was doing my master's program at that time, while at the same time I was building an organization, you know, and so it was, it has been challenging, obviously, but it has also been beautiful, you know, to build specific services designed to uplift the livelihood of our community, right? And, you know, we have evolved into not just support trans Latino people, right? But also to think of the infrastructure development that needs to happen in our community and how we contribute to that, right? And so we do direct service provision to our community, but also we do policy work, right? And so we function with these 2 arms to better the livelihood of our community.
That's so powerful. That's so powerful. And I'm so glad that you all handle this balance, right, of the addressing the acute needs, but also thinking long term, how do we create this policy change, the structural change to make sure that this work is sustainable across time and beyond any of us?
For sure. And I mean, obviously, you know, health is one of the things that it's important to us, right? Because the way we're thinking about this is like, how do we build healthy trans people, right?
Yes.
And I'm so grateful that we are working together in this, you know, health reform campaign, in which, you know, we are part of, but we are bringing the voices of transgender, non-conforming, intersex people into this whole, you know, thing, right? So I'm really excited and grateful that we get to do this.
I couldn't agree more. And in that search for health equity, what do you think is left to do? How do we finally achieve health equity for our communities?
I mean, there's a lot of work that needs to happen, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of education that needs to happen. But there is, you know, a systemic change that needs to happen, right? I think it's important to understand that how the healthcare system is designed. Mm-hmm. It really is to make money off people, right? Mm-hmm. That is why, you know, they have built this narrative of, you know, insurances, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have better insurance, then you have better access to care, right? And so many of our people don't necessarily have that type of care, right? Mm-hmm. Most of our people rely on the, you know, I guess for the lack of a better word, like government care, right? Mm-hmm. And so because there's so many people, the system is so saturated and, you know, ultimately people don't get the care that they deserve. Yeah. And that is, again, because, you know, if you have the resources and the best insurance, or if you're able to pay for a private doctor or private hospital, then you can get, you know, better care. And so, you know, we need to obviously influence that change, right? Because healthcare is a human right. And, you know, everyone should have access to the care that they need when they need it, regardless of, you know, monetary status or social status, right? And so I think broadly, we have to think about how we are going to transform the system as is and make it work for, you know, for all and not just for a few that do have the ability to have access.
Beautifully put. And, you know, many times in our day-to-day work, we're talking about these big changes, and sometimes we forget that we have the power to influence and make a huge difference in the lives of those around us. I know you all work very intentionally to make sure you're centering health equity with your team, and I've heard about the amazing opportunities that you provide for your team, from a sabbatical to massages. Can you tell us about those health equity practices within your team?
Well, I mean, yes, we as an organization, you know, are intentional and understanding, right, of how hard this work is, right? But also, you know, what we need to do to take care of the people who do this work, right? And so we have implemented different policies here at our organization to really take care of people, right? Like every first Monday of the month, people, you know, they're a self-care day or a mental health day or however people want to frame it. But basically, they just get a day off that is paid to do whatever they want. Some people, you know, may need to do their laundry or whatever it is, right? Because a lot of times we don't, you know, sometimes people want to do their nails, whatever it is, right? So that's some of the things that we do. We have implemented a sabbatical policy for all of our employees. We also, this year, we started a policy to support our employees, those who want to get into higher education. We will cover 50% of their tuition. Obviously, you know, not necessarily private schools, yes, but we will support them with some. Obviously, we know that some private schools are super expensive. And so we have to have some type of limitation for that. But if they would go to like a UC or Cal State system, for instance, you know, we will cover 50% of their tuition.
That's huge.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was in Children's Hospital Los Angeles, like I used to pay $6,000 for my tuition every quarter. Semester. It was a semester because every quarter was $3,000. And I would only get like $200. You know, they did have a tuition program, but, you know, which, you know, it's something, but we want to be intentional in how we are supporting people, right? And so, you know, so those are some of the things that we, you know, we have incorporated. In addition to that, you know, all of our employees also get free healthcare. So any copays or whatever they have to pay for, we reimburse them. And that includes, obviously, a good dental plan. Mm-hmm. You know, oral health is also important. And vision. And, you know, for life insurance, we are providing a, we have created a fund here internally to support our employees who may need it to, you know, to cover some of the expenses that they, you know, if they need to, you know, for, if something tragic happens, right? And so, those are some of the things that we are, you know, doing to support our community.
I love that.
Our employees.
Yeah. I love how intentional you are in creating a healthy work environment, an environment where your team feels supported. I think that's so important in the nonprofit space, because a lot of the folks that we get in our offices have very much personally experienced the work that now we're trying to address. So we have to take care of each other in this work.
Yes. And, you know, we definitely try to find ways, you know, my job is to fundraise. So that, you know, that's what I need to do. Like, have multiple conversations with people to understand what needs to happen to support our people as a whole.
I love that. I love that. Well, con eso, muchísimas gracias for joining us today. It was such a beautiful conversation, and I feel so privileged to be spending this morning with you and having this beautiful conversation with you.
No, thank you so much for the opportunity to chat with you and to share space with you, and obviously to the audience. Please be well, be healthy, take care, and, you know, be your best always.
I love it. Muchísimas gracias.
Un abrazote, bella. Que estés bien.
Un abrazote.
Te quiero.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.